everyone. Welcome to the Squanch, Wisecrack's Rick and Morty podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined today by the Wisecrack video editor, Ryan.
Wubba lubba hi!
And our content lead, Alec.
Hey.
And we also have a special guest today from another Rick and Morty podcast, Brandon from the Interdimensional RSS. How's it going, Brandon?
Oh, hey. I'm doing good. How are you gents doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be here on a happy Monday morning.
Brandon, has anyone ever told you you sound like Justin Roiland?
Okay. So, in one of our reviews, it said, like, I hope this Brandon guy stops sounding like trying to pretend to be Justin Roiland. And I was like, man, I'm not trying. I'm really not trying. This is naturally how I sound. I sound stupid.
Cool.
That's funny. All right. So last night was the premiere of season 3, episode 8 of Rick and Morty, Morty's Mind Blowers. Let's get some first reactions. Ryan, what did you think?
B minus.
B minus. Go on.
Pretty funny. I always like Interdimensional Cable, I think, even more than you do. So this was, their anthology episode, and I like anthology episodes okay. I kind of tend to prefer the more full-length narratives. That's kind of my overall take.
Right. So in contrast to other interdimensional cable episodes, did you like this one more, less?
Yes, I liked it more.
Okay.
I liked it. Yeah, I think it was better than an interdimensional cable episode.
All right, Alec, what did you think?
I thought there were some great jokes, but overall I thought it was kind of meh. And that might be controversial.
C minus then?
Yeah, C minus.
Okay.
Okay, Brandon, what about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the meh train. The meh train. A little bit. I'd say B. I think it could move into B plus territory upon more rewatches.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Interdimensional Cable episodes. However, I will say that I like this idea more than Interdimensional Cable, or at least, don't get me wrong, I actually loved the first Interdimensional Cable episode. I thought it was super clever. I thought it was unnecessary for them to do it again in season 2. So I guess if we're to believe that there's a tradition now that one episode per season, they're doing some sort of improv clip episode, I'm glad that they did something different. I'm glad that they did, the Morty's Mind Blowers. And I thought this was probably a clever... This is the second time in this podcast I've said cleverer, which is not even a word. It's a more clever way to do it than just doing Interdimensional Cable again. So I enjoyed it. I would probably be, in terms of clip episodes, I'd say it's probably the best one yet. But in terms of... In relation to other episodes, I'm kind of with you guys. I prefer when it's a regular narrative.
I want to argue with you, Jared, because the great thing about the internet interdimensional cable episodes is all the memorable characters like, Ants in My Eyes, Johnson. What are some of the other ones?
Jones. Yeah.
Well, the guy with the doors.
Crombunculus Michael or something.
No,
is that from that?
That's a different
one. Okay.
Ball Fondlers. They're in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Ball Fondlers was a classic. Yeah. Yeah.
Zorp Field.
We don't really have any classics here.
Well, we'll talk about that. I thought the Floop Floopian, the suicide thing was pretty good.
Whereas Interdimensional Cable was all more about, introducing crazy characters and different TV shows and stuff, this was more like the Twilight Zone, where it was supposed to be more about the weird ghost story kind of vibe of each story. It was more about the story, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, right. I think the moon conspiracy one was very
right,
Twilight Zone-y. And my co-host Travis, he sent me a message. He's like, hey, Twilight Zone, because I have a Twilight Zone podcast that I do over there on the side somewhere else. but I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the segment of this particular episode that speaks most to that kind of Twilight Zone-y anthology feel.
But it's the first one.
Yeah.
So it kind of like sets it up like that. And then they have that Contact parody, which was amazing.
Was it Interstellar or both?
I think it was a little bit of both.
It was Contact.
Well, it was Contact, but then the whole idea of Rick basically conveying a message that, turns out to be some equation is very reminiscent of Interstellar.
Well, that's Contact.
Oh, that's Contact. I'll be honest. I actually haven't seen Contact. but I do know, the scene when she hears the click, click, clicks, and she's like,
It's all about, you know, like Jodie Foster gets the beam of, you know, they are an architecture for to build a ship that they build to go to their galaxy.
Oh, okay. So it is
exactly freaking contact.
Okay. But we're missing the most important reference, which is the Menagerie is a Star Trek episode where these aliens try to trap them into like a glass sort of cage.
And then it was also the whole thing was kind of an Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind vibe, right?
Yeah, I mean, only in that it's about erasing memories, though.
Well,
like, there's nothing about relationships. I don't know. I mean, I think that if they were trying to make an explicit connection between that, they probably could have taken it further, because I don't really... There were no visual references to Eternal Sunshine. There were no lines that were reminiscent of Eternal Sunshine. But the thing I do like about this episode is, you know, when we think about Interdimensional Cable, I guess if we're saying the smart joke of Interdimensional Cable is that, oh, there are infinite universes, so the television channels in every universe or in any universe is going to inevitably be super absurd. And which is why when they did it a second time, I was like, okay, so, you know, intellectually, you're just telling the same joke again. This is a little bit lame. But this one, I like the idea. You know, it plays with some different ideas, one of which is that, you know, the truth hurts. So there are all these things that, especially with the truth tortoise.
Jared, do you want to tell the world what we discovered about the truth tortoise?
Yes. Actually, Brandon, I'm curious if you got this. But actually, this morning, right before Ryan came into the office, I called him because he has Adobe Premiere on his computer. And I said, Ryan, 15 seconds into the episode, the truth tortoise says something, and I'm pretty sure there's something to be, like, I'm pretty sure it's something in reverse. So can you put it in the Premiere and play it backwards and tell me what it says? Did you catch that, Brandon?
So I watched that part like five times. I'm like, I think it's in reverse, but I really don't. I can't be bothered to put things backwards.
Well, we figured it out.
Well, we figured it out. Ryan, why don't you tell
us
what the turtle says?
Reddit also figured it out. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, damn it.
Of course they did.
All right. Well, we did it manually. And he says, hold on. It says, I am the beetle. Paul is dead. It's a reference to Paul McCartney being dead. And this truth tortoise, I guess, is the real fourth beetle. So, interesting.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that conspiracy, Ryan?
Yeah, basically, a lot of people think that Paul McCartney, the real Paul McCartney, died in a car accident back in the 80s, and that they replaced him with a lookalike, a perfect lookalike who's gone on to, you know, take over his life. And there's supposed to be all these clues, like on the cover of Abbey Road
yeah.
and in certain songs, like I Am the Walrus and stuff. And so, yeah, to this day, Paul McCartney gets asked if he's a fraud. And yeah.
It's so funny.
Isn't there also a backwards message in one of the Beatles songs that people interpret as one of these, this proof?
I think you're right. I don't know the song, though.
Chupa Chupa, Chupa Chupa. I think that's it. That's all the evidence you need.
Yeah. Also, does the fact that Paul McCartney now sucks, is that evidence that
hey,
real Paul McCartney's dead?
Oh, you watch yourself.
Wings, man. Wings.
So one thing I want to talk about in this episode is that there are always a lot of meta jokes in Rick and Morty, but I felt like in this episode in particular, there were a lot of jokes that are specifically targeted towards the writers, or rather the writers are just kind of airing their own frustrations and even frustrations toward each other. So, for example, when they're in the menagerie, in Morty's menagerie, Morty asks, what is a menagerie? And Rick says, they're like commemorative plates, but less off-putting. You'll understand when you're still dating in your 40s. So I'm sure that one of the writers, whether it's Ryan Ridley or Justin Roiland or someone,
there's
probably...
There's six writers on this episode.
Oh, well, probably because each writer got their own little mini story. But someone is obviously, I think, still dating in their 40s. Brandon, do you happen to know who's married and who's not?
That's your takeaway from that? Is that you think it's the writer complaining about his dating life?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You don't think so?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. I know that Harmon is, I think he's single, not married. So,
well, he just
recently divorced, right?
Yeah, recently divorced.
Yeah. So we can tie that together.
Well, okay, so I think the one that really nails it all together is the final joke of the episode where Summer says, "No wonder you're constantly fighting with each other and behind schedule." So, first of all, I don't think that this joke has any, it doesn't make sense within the text of the actual episode. Like, Summer is explicitly talking about the show and talking about the writers, because what is she talking about them being behind schedule? This is just a joke about how it took, you know, way too long for season three to come out, and how I don't know who is fighting, if it's Harmon and Roiland that are constantly fighting that made the season take so long. But this is, unless you guys disagree, I do think that this is a joke that only functions as a meta joke. It has no bearing in the actual episode or the actual text.
Yeah.
I think it's spot on. I mean, it's clearly a meta joke. It's the same way that Rick says at the very beginning, we're doing this in place of interdimensional Cable, right?
Right. Once again, admitting he's on a TV show.
But I guess my question, though, is it that, like, Morty is supposed to be Justin Roiland and Rick is supposed to be Dan? Like, is there an additional parallel, or is it literally?
No.
Like, is there slightly more sense to this joke?
Well, I actually, obviously, Summer is just making a comment about how, I guess, the writing team, whoever it is, they're always fighting. But what is she even, like, so they're, basically, they're just calling her a bitch and blaming her for everything. And then she says, no wonder you're constantly fighting with each other and behind schedule. Like, that kind of seems to come out of nowhere. I really don't see any motivation. It just doesn't make sense. Like, is it that she's saying, like, you guys are constantly fighting and behind schedule because you're mean to me, because you're blaming other people for your problems? Like, what exactly is she saying?
I mean, I think that you can kind of, obviously there's the meta joke part of it, but then the other part is that you can, you know, just on their adventures, they're behind schedule because they're fighting with each other.
Nah, I don't buy that.
You don't think that's the explanation? Or make...
Well, what is the schedule? I mean, that, like, there's no deadlines. There's definitely a deadline when you're writing a television show that doesn't need 2 years.
Well, obviously,
it
functions mainly as the meta joke that you're talking about, but I guess I'm just trying to apply it to their everyday life.
I mean, maybe they have their phone, right? And then it says, oh, the month of September, we're supposed to go on this adventure on Tuesday. Oh, shit.
Yeah, Jared.
Well, that's certainly possible. That's certainly possible, but we don't have any proof of that.
We just extrapolate it from... I don't think it's anything other than telling us Summer also knows she's in a TV show.
So, do you guys want to take a second to talk about this whole idea of Rick knowing that he's in a television show? Because I think I probably disagree with you guys in terms of the relevance of this.
I think Brandon had a special guest on his interview who might have answered this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did. So we had Ryan Ridley on, and he mentioned this specific little piece with Rick knowing that he's in a TV show. And what it boils down to is sometimes gags are just gags. And
absolutely.
And that's really what it is, right? It's the writers making a joke to us saying, hey, we know this TV show, we're with you on this. But there's nothing more to read into it other than that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And even without Ryan Ridley having said that, just the nature of a fourth wall break communicates this idea. When you think about a fourth wall break, just think of the word break. The proof is just in the pudding. When the fourth wall break occurs, the movie or the narrative, it does stop and the writer shows his face. It's essentially a narrative intermission. Because if you break the fourth wall, then the narrative breaks. That's what it means to break the fourth wall. Then if you are to say that breaking the fourth wall is, you know, part of the narrative itself, then what are we to believe? We're to believe that there's actually, you know, a cartoon cameraman that is filming Rick. You know, are we to believe that, you know, okay, if we say that Rick knows he's in a television show, therefore all of his motivations in the show are arbitrary, and really he's only doing this because he knows he's in a television show and he needs a paycheck because he's acting in a television show, you have to basically ignore that.
I mean, it's the only reason we're talking about it right now, because obviously it's a fourth, just like you said, a fourth wall intermission break that is totally just for gags, a gag to be a gag. But the only reason we're talking about it is because Rick and Morty deals with the themes of just the nature of reality, existentialism, God, you know, like,
yes,
it's all those things. So for any other show, you know, Ferris Bueller, you're not thinking about, like, oh, is he talking to a cameraman in his shower? You're just like, oh, it's just a gag, or just a structured story device. But here it's like, okay, what does this mean? Because Rick and Morty only deals with...
Right. So another thing I just want to point out really quick in terms of this whole thing that Ryan Ridley's saying is a gag is just a gag and is not meant to be taken literally as if it's relevant to the actual mythology of the narrative. So in this episode, we see Rick and Morty go to a restaurant called Don Cuco. Don Cuco is a real restaurant, and there's one in Toluca Lake, and there's one in Burbank. So are we supposed to believe that Rick and Morty live in L.A. because, you know, they're doing that Don Cuco thing? No. Like, I don't think that it's just a shout out to a restaurant that the writers like to go to, or it's just a shout out to something that's kind of a staple of their community.
Well, you could also make the case that, you know, they just portal gun there.
I mean, you mean to, I mean,
because they show up in different
LA.
They show up in different scenarios.
It's not
different
important
locations
that it's LA,
all the time.
But I'm just saying it's not important that it's LA. Like, we should not take that as evidence to the fact that it's LA. It's just a gag. It's just a shout out to a restaurant that they like.
Right. Sure. Right. Because right next to that is the Vomit Superstore, I think.
Right.
So
yeah, and that's not next to it in real life.
Totally no, that, real place. Yeah.
No, that's next to Trader Joe's in Northridge. So.
I have a, speaking of how we shouldn't take stock in these Rick and Morty theories, I have a theory.
Oh, let's hear
go
it, baby.
It.
There was just that line where Summer is like, I don't get paid enough for this shit, like as she's, you know, fixing their memories.
Oh yeah, what the fuck was that?
Oh, I see where you're going with this. I already like it. Go ahead.
You know, it's a very loosely formed theory, but like, you know, maybe like Summer is like a paid agent of Rick, or like not really Morty's sister or whatever. And also someone had sent us an email suggesting that Diane, Rick's wife, never existed, and that like Beth was maybe like a clone, or you know, created from scratch, whatever Rick did to create his daughter. I'm not really buying into that, but I do like this idea that maybe like the family's engineered in some funny way.
I mean, it's obviously though another meta joke where the voice actor, right?
I was going to say, see, that's not where I thought you were going with this, Alec. I thought, you know, so we know that there are a lot of female writers on the staff now, and I was thinking that, like, it's basically the female writers babysitting Roiland and Harmon as they fight all day.
No.
I mean, if anything, it's
the voice actress coming through and breaking the fourth wall saying, I don't get paid for this
shit. But the voice actress didn't write the script. The writers wrote it.
I know, but you're not supposed to think about the writers when you watch the show. You're listening to Summer say.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. Like, you're just saying that the voice actress doesn't get paid enough for saying a line. I mean, she's just saying a line.
The
joke is that she's a mouthpiece for the female writers, or just other writers who have to fucking babysit Roiland and Harmon as they fight all day.
I think that's a
what do you think, Brandon?
Illusion.
Brandon, what do you think?
Oh, I'm just enjoying the hell out of this argument come back for. When I heard it, I took it as a joke from Summer, as like she's not getting paid enough as a voice actress. That's how I
took
it.
Thank you. It's 2-2.
Oh, God damn it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. No, I mean,
sometimes the writers break the fourth wall. Sometimes the actors do.
If you're listening, send us an email. Tell us which interpretation you like better.
And voice actress of Summer, if you're listening, tell us what's going on.
Yeah, please, voice actress of Summer. Brandon, do you know that actress's name?
Yes, I do.
Chalky?
That's Beth. Yeah. No, shoot. What? I'm having a brain dump now. Well, I'll come back to
it. It's all right. We got IMDb. One just small detail. This is kind of changing the subjects, but as an editor, I really enjoyed the joke of poop aids underscore copy, you know, he needs to make real file names, and I totally do that all the time. I just like it really quickly, just make a file name that's just nothing, and then later on I'm like,
he said,
fuck, what did I name that fucking file, you know? And it's always like there's a copy at the end or something, because he had just broken the one that was like, I think, like, I don't know, shit aids or something. And he's like, oh, I found poop aids copy, which is the same one. Anyway.
Spencer Grammer. There nice. You go.
I just wanted to tell the audience that Jared's notes also never has real file names. And he was always like, where did I put these? And I have to find it in my email somewhere.
Yeah, that's half of Alec's job. It's just like, hey, can you send me the file that I forgot to name? So here's another thing that maybe you guys are going to disagree with. I found that there's a very subtle, very short YouTube allusion.
Yep.
And it's not when Morty says, It's not when Morty says, all right, save it for YouTube. We can talk about that later. But during the true level thing.
True level?
True level. So basically when Morty is building a shelf and Rick says, you want to experience true level? And then he builds it. There's like four or five cuts of when Rick is building the true level. And I don't know if you guys, are you guys familiar with the channel Primitive Technologies?
No.
Nope.
Oh, man. It's one of the best channels on YouTube. I mean, it's basically this guy in the woods who it's all silent and all you can hear. And the rhythm of the editing is basically just him, you know, hammering and then him sawing and then him, you know, doing a sanding something down. And but
doesn't sound that appealing. Keep going.
Well, no, he's in the woods with no tools and he creates like a house out of just trees.
Oh, okay.
So it's amazing. Like the editing style and the overall aesthetic, I think, you know, it's only like 10 seconds in the episode, but I think that it is a reference to that YouTube channel. And it's that YouTube channel is like 4 million subscribers. It's huge.
But wait a minute. You mean because there's four cuts of him just leveling this thing.
He's creating the level and it's silent and basically the rhythm of the sound effects as well as the cut is very reminiscent of Primitive Technologies. It could be a stretch, although if any of you guys are listening are fans of Primitive Technology, I'd like to hear what you think because
looks like a pretty standard montage to me, but maybe. I've never listened to this channel, though.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's why I'm not 100% sold on this. But when I watched it, it did remind me of that. And once again, the sound effects and the rhythm and the way that it's cut and the fact that there was no background music definitely was very Primitive Technologies-esque.
I've never seen the channel, so I'm going to agree with you and say absolutely. Yeah.
If nothing else, I mean, you should check out the channel. It's extremely impressive.
How did the one with the level end again?
Basically, like Morty stands on the level and
he has this orgasmic
experience. And then when he steps off the level, he's like, oh my God, the world is crooked. Everything is awful. It's almost like he becomes like a crack addict immediately. And then basically, Rick just tells Summer, all right, I'm going to have to, you know, erase his memory to make sure, you know. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny.
Lambs to the cosmic slaughter.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of my favorite jokes.
What does that mean?
You know, like lambs to the slaughter just means, you know, you are sort of a helpless victim to get murdered. Like, it's just an analogy you can use for lots of things like war, like, oh, the soldiers were lambs to the slaughter or, you know, whatever. But the cosmic slaughter being, I think we talk about the cruel indifference of the cosmos, probably that. That was one of my favorite jokes. Everything's crooked. Reality's poison. I want to go back. I hate this. Then he says, lambs to the cosmic slaughter.
The most I laughed during the episode was the freaking squirrels.
I knew that was going to be you, especially because the squirrels are the reason why Argentina has been destabilized and is in chaos.
Yeah, I love that, man. And then the whole thing about, is he a Doolittle, you know?
Tell Daphne we have to run a 199 a possible Doolittle.
Yeah.
You know, one thing.
And they're destabilizing countries. It's great.
If we are talking about theories and narrative consistency, one thing that this did reinforce is that they have moved realities more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explain.
So after basically.
Oh, yeah.
After the squirrels, you know, start swarming them and Rick has to stun them, Rick says, we have to pack up and move to a new reality, Morty. I said we can only do that a couple times. We're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know that the Cronenberg world is not the only reality they left behind because now they had to leave behind whatever reality that was. You know, the other thing I found interesting is that it seems like all of these memories take place within essentially the third season while they are where Beth and Jerry are still divorced.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Why do we know that?
Go ahead.
The post-credit scene where it's Jerry's mind blowers, he's in his depressing ass apartment instead of saving Gobo. So there's that. We also, I mean, we don't necessarily know that the squirrels is after the events of the Cronenberg episode because it could have taken place beforehand and maybe he's just told Morty multiple times that we can only do this a couple of times. But yeah, I guess, is it just because Jerry's not in it?
No. So basically the post-credit one is definitely one of them. I think there was another one.
Well, so the one where Voltmetron, right, and they're on they're on Phoebes or whatever, and then it's just Beth and Summer and Morty, and there's no Jerry, and then when they're trying to get the worm out of Morty, it's just Beth, Summer, and Rick, right? So like that just kind of implies that this, it seems like all these are taking place after the divorce rather than before,
which is weird though, right? Because I mean, we don't think that whole room is filled with memories from the last couple of months.
Well, we have no idea how long, you know, they've been divorced. We don't really know how long this season in terms of, you know, months, years, whatever.
But he's always they're always the same age, though.
There's one thing about the last episode that I really think changes people's, like, how they think about theories. Like, let's say there was an event that caused a crack in, you know, C-137 or whatever reality that they're currently in. As we saw with the news reporters, there was that Rick that was numbered like A, B, and C. Like there was a divergent moment where they all made a choice that like caused them to be different. So there could be, I guess, versions of Rick and Morty that like diverge after the crack moment, but are still in separate realities. That's how I think about it.
It's one way they can get around it. Yeah.
I had this thought just on that real quick. Of, you know, you bring up that Anderson Cooper-esque moment. Okay, so in that one episode in season two where autoerotic assimilation, where Rick almost kills himself, right? I tend to think that if, you know, if there's these multiple A, B, and C dimensions, that there's only the Rickest Rick, so there aren't any other dimensions because he was successful in suicide.
Hmm.
Wait, you mean he actually killed himself?
Yeah. Yeah,
but we.
So this is all a dream.
We saw was a dream.
Well, no.
Is that what you're saying?
So no. So there's these multiple dimensions A, B, C, D, and then Rick is C-137 Rick, but any other version of him killed himself at that moment. So C-137A killed himself. C-137B killed himself. So on and so forth. That way, Rick is still the Rickest Rick of C-137.
I'll take it.
It's a stretch. I just want to throw it out there.
And twist swing.
Do we want to talk about the YouTube joke?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so we can talk about the YouTube joke, although, I don't know, when I first heard it, I was like, oh man, you know, I don't know, what do you take of that?
Can you say it again? What's the YouTube joke again?
The YouTube joke is, as soon as both of them get their memories wiped, Morty says something about Men in Black, and Rick says, Men in Black? Well, I've got Men in Black 2 in here. And then Morty's like, so you get the idea. And then Rick says, haha, not quite. It's basically just an endless series of callbacks. And then Morty says, all right, save it for YouTube.
Right. He's talking about us.
I don't think
he's making fun of us.
I don't think he is. I think that basically he's just saying that YouTube is a place where there is criticism of, I mean, that's what we do. It's criticism of media. But I don't think that it's a, like, you know, it's like an overthinking joke.
Well, the fact that it's Men in Black 2 is what makes it overthinking. It's just like, all right, save your freaking cultural analysis of Men in Black 2 for the internet where people care.
It's not a cultural analysis. It's basically just criticizing Men in Black 2 for being basically just a series of callbacks to Men in Black 1
or just
having
analysis
no originality
of the movie.
I think it's referring to the channels that are like 18 callbacks you missed in Men in Black. Like,
I agree with that.
Yeah,
CinemaSins.
Actually, I'm thinking of a subreddit here, which I fucking love. What is movie details or something? So, like, the example is, you know, John Wick 2 was shot years after the first one, but narratively takes place like a couple days after it. So the same cars are still like parked on the street, like they did the due diligence to find it. I imagine, like, if there's Men in Black 2 callbacks, they'll be like, oh, this alien is a reference to the one that was in the movie before, blah, blah, blah. And there's, like, all those YouTube videos that are, like, you know, the 30 things you missed. And, you know, you also see it in BuzzFeed articles and shit like that. However, my greatest fear is that Justin Roiland, Dan Harmon, Ryan Ridley, any of the other people who work on the show will watch our YouTube channel and be like, these guys suck.
Yeah, I mean, I have that thought sometimes too. I mean, I think that in general, artists can sometimes be a little bit, I don't know, on the one hand, like what we do, you know, enhances the appreciation for what they do. So on the one hand, I think that they could possibly appreciate it because, you know, they work really hard making the show really smart, and perhaps, you know, seeing what people like us do, you know, it gives them confidence that, you know, what they're doing is connecting with people and that it's all not all for naught. But on the other hand, I think that sometimes artists, you know, get very vulnerable when people start, you know, criticizing their work to a very
I don't see them
degree.
Being that way. I feel like they'd be like how I would be if I made a badass cartoon like Rick and Morty, which is I'd watch fucking every video on the internet about it. And I'd be like, oh, cool, they caught that? Or you know, those people are fucking dumb and wrong.
If anything, there's another line here that I think actually almost reinforces their desire for people to look closely at what they do. So when Morty says, so if the blue ones are my fault and the purple ones are my family's, what's the red ones? And then Rick says, yeah, don't read into it, Morty. But the thing is, Morty is right. You know, it's not that it would be one thing if Morty said, you know, that the red ones represent this, the blue ones represent that, the purple ones represent that. And then he was wrong and it was just arbitrary. But it's not wrong. Rick is just saying, you know, don't think about it. But Morty is right. So I think, you know, in a sense, it affirms the efforts of those looking for meaning.
I think it's more just like a callback to how he usually says, don't think about it. But usually it's more like, you know, about more absurd things. But this is like him trying to get out of something, because obviously the red ones are about him fucking up. You know, he's like, oh, just don't think about it. Like, I just don't want you to pay attention to me.
Well, this is the second time, because even in Pickle Rick, he said, you know, don't read into it. Just be impressed. But I think that, I mean, it's very clear, especially with the Citadel episode, that, you know, they are creating stuff to be analyzed.
I can see that interpretation, yeah.
All right, let's move on to the mailbag. Alec, do you have some questions for us?
Yeah, and just a reminder, if anyone wants to send us any questions, you can email us at squanch@wisecrack.co, or you can hit us up on Twitter at wisecrack, or even just use the hashtag the squanch. But some quick things on Twitter from this morning. In Morty's Mind Blowers, did anyone notice the one yellow memory vial? This comes from Jake Grenier. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong.
Yes.
I did not notice. What is your take on that, Brandon?
Well, I have an answer to what I think is the answer. When Summer comes in, Scenario 4 and all that stuff, she pulls two vials out. One is yellow, one is blue. One is for Morty, one is for Rick. So it might be complete memory rewipes, because the yellow vial is for Morty and he gets his entire memory back. So there's more than one yellow vial depending on which background you're looking at in the episode.
So you're saying he has backups?
Yes.
Of his whole memory.
Yeah.
That'd be good to know, especially if you have shitty file names for so the next tweet is actually about last episode, Tales from the Citadel, Reclantis Mix-Up, whatever you want to call it. This comes from Christian. At Wisecrack, listen to the pod, and don't you think it's Brave New World-ish with the cookies being Soma and the world being hierarchical? I thought this was like a pretty solid like thing that we forgot to mention.
I don't. What cookies are we talking about?
We're talking about Simple Rick wafers being. Have you guys read Brave New World?
I have. Yeah, I remember the wafers. I was like, wait, cookies? I don't know. I mean, Soma. Yeah, I can see that it keeps the population complacent, but yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that. I think that the Brave New World thing is also pretty present in the Rickshank Redemption, with them just like feeding them a bunch of pills. Soma, and in Brave New World also, it's like it enables you to have like these orgies that kind of fulfill your sexual appetite to keep people complacent. And as far as the wafers, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess just in the sense that it's a substance that keeps the population complacent and happy. I mean, yeah, sure. I could see that for sure.
All right. So the next question, it's an email from Allison. It goes back to what I'll call our poop saga. we're starting the poop saga. So
my entire inbox is filled with people emailing us about eating poop.
Yeah, and I just want all of our listeners, we got a lot of emails about poop, and
thank
I apologize
you.
To anyone. We got one really good response, and there were lots of also very good ones. I don't mean
I think
to
we got
favors.
Dozens of good responses.
No, no,
I learned a lot about eating poop.
And
I'll tell you that.
It makes me love our fans, because we have like people who had like specialties in like biomechanical engineering and, you know, veterinary science, and, you know, someone with a master's in science, although they didn't specify like, you know, what subspecialty. The point is, a lot of you seem very smart and probably much smarter than us, but we're going to read one, I think, pretty thorough one. And I also Googled around to see if it looked legit, you know, like someone could just be like lying to us about being a scientist. Anyway, so this is from Allison. She says, "Hey, Wisecrack, love your podcast and your quick takes on YouTube. I'm an animal nutritionist. It's basically a human nutritionist with the added useless information of every conceivable animal. Very short answer is yes, you can survive off of human feces. Firstly, our bodies excrete excess nutrients. This can be vitamins, minerals, proteins, fat, etc. This means that our feces is loaded full of all this excess material. Our bodies additionally excrete bacteria and undigested food. Feces eaten the first time would yield an uptake of the excess nutrients that had been lost and now has the potential to be reabsorbed. Feces eaten a second time would likely not yield much as the vast majority of nutrients would have been absorbed. This could still be of use if the goal is to fill oneself instead of fuel themselves. This is also why person 3 of the human centipede is screwed and person 2 is just unlucky. As long as Mr. as long as Mr. Goldenfold continued to consume new feces on a regular basis and did not consume his own, there's the possibility that he could survive quite well." Allison moves on to the negatives. First of all, personal note for me, please nobody eat your own shit. But anyway, so as we get into the negatives, the largest issue that Mr. Goldenfold has to deal with is disease and medication. If you only consume feces from healthy people or yourself, which is already inoculated with your own gut bacteria, then you would be fine. However, if someone is ill and you consume their feces, you could become very sick, for instance, cholera. Additionally, if someone is taking medication, the excess medication would be in their feces and would get and you would get it by proxy. Everyone is taking a melange of pills. Is that what that word is? Melange?
Melange, I think, is the appropriate way to say it. Yeah. I think.
Whatever. Don't take it for granted. So this would mean that Mr. Goldenfold is consuming all the medicated human waste. He would be getting antidepressants, blood pressure medication, chemotherapy medication, antibiotics, etc. This could kill him depending on the amount, severity, and his own needs. So that's Allison's very thorough response. Although,
Thank you, Allison.
Thanks. God damn.
Thanks, Allison. So, that's solid.
Is Allison a corpophagia expert?
Does
she have the same job as Dr. Wong?
Well, so we got another email. I don't remember the name, but so I think her animal nutrition probably primed her for this because there are animals who don't as efficiently consume food. So they eat their own shit to like they need two pass-throughs to get all the good stuff. And actually, this is worth looking into more about humans specifically. I know there is a small amount of nutrients that are undigested, but I am not sure if it is enough to actually like fuel your energy, you know, like is that one corn kernel really going to do it? And obviously like the other issue is just like if it's not healthy or even if it's old, you know, parasites galore and shit like that.
I guess depending on how many people were there underground with Mr. Goldenfold, they can set up a system in which, you know, everyone is eating someone else's poop. And then right. when they poop it out, you know, they kind of, you know, have some sort of an Excel document that suggests how can we optimize the amount of nutrients that one person has received from eating person X's poop.
Right.
But then, you know, once that poop is pooped out, then, you know, person Y will be having, you know, those nutrients.
It's human centipede style.
It's diminishing poop turns, you know?
Yeah,
it's
diminishing poop turns is the perfect word. Yeah, I think it would not last you very long. So I wonder if there is an amount of food that is coming in, fresh food, even though it's probably not fresh, like, you know, that can sort of, it's like more energy into the system that can therefore be re-poop cycled. Yeah, so John sent us an interesting email that gets back to this Citadel joke, or I am going to classify it as jokes against the viewer. John said this whole week he's been thinking about the episode over and over. This is Tales from the Citadel, working my way through its sociopolitical ideas and attitudes. And then he rewatched it today. And the first thing C-130 says is in the introduction is, "Anyone continuing to explore the Citadel is either stupid or one of the unfortunate millions trapped by its bad ideas." C-137 Morty replies, "Yeah, I'm glad I'm not one of them. Was all that just one big prank on the fans saying, ha, you're dumb? He could have been making some social commentary on the actual act of thinking about injustice, politics, and poverty, or this could have been part of the hero's journey where we are illustrated by the writers the literal consequences of..." And just paraphrasing here, "the literal consequences of not heeding the call to action," which I thought was another way to... We talk about the very consistent sort of writing structure of each episode. There's a call to action that they usually answer, and this is literally exploring the consequences of when you don't heed that call to action.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if you guys have knew this, but Dan Harmon loves the whole story circle, the monomyth of Joseph Campbell, right? And he put out there his guide to the story circle, which basically boils down to eight segments. You need go search, find, take, return, change. So I'm glad he narrowed it down to those things. But I think it's very how do I say, you can cut all that stuff out. I think it's very noticeable Harmon's influence on Rick and Morty as a whole, especially with his affinity for the story circle.
Honestly, I'm always really curious about, you know, because obviously the whole heart of the of Rick and Morty is, I feel like, you know, comes straight from Justin Roiland's mind. But then it seems like Dan Harmon obviously has a, you know, irreplaceable contribution to the show in terms of, yeah, what you're saying, the monomyth and stuff. I would love to know, like who is more responsible for whatever, you know. They're both so smart. Anyway, moving on. But can do the voices and the jokes. That's the jokes.
My inclination, and this is based on nothing, but I think that Roiland is probably more the philosophical core of the show.
Maybe, yeah.
And I think that Harmon's probably more story structure, more world building, you know, in terms of the worlds that are created, the sci-fi references and stuff. But when it comes to, I think, the smarts and the existential element, I think it's Roiland. But I don't know. I could be completely wrong.
So we also have another email from Charles, which kind of touches on what we were just talking about making Rick and Morty making fun of the viewers. To condense a very long email, do you think Freedom Wafer Select's idea is a meta jab at Rick and Morty itself? So essentially, the argument is that we all get off on the shattering the grand illusion. And I think especially Rick kind of functions like this.
Yeah, so I like this email a lot. Basically, the point he's making is that Rick and Morty itself is a show that you know, benefits from the system, and yet they are creating comedy by kind of disillusioning you from the system.
It's kind of like a metaphor for how disillusionment can be become the status quo and be just as commoditized as, you know, a woodworking simple life.
Well, no, I think that, so what he's saying is that, you know, Rick and Morty is, it's like Hot Topic. You know, we talk about Hot Topic is like, you know, they're commodifying dissent, or which is really just helping the system. And Rick and Morty is, you know, popular because it has this kind of rebellious against the system, or like disillusioning you from the system. But they are making a shit ton of money off the system, off of capitalism. You know, like, they are a show that makes a ton of money off of advertisement, you know, whether it's just the commercials that are in the show, or, you know, the Carl's Jr. ads that they've been doing, or all of the swag and the merchandising that they're making a ton of money off of.
And succeeding within the system, especially with the Reclantis mix-up, you know, the email brings up Cop Morty, Stand By Me parody, the factory worker Rick, right? All these tropes that we've established over the years, right? In the cultural consciousness of it all. And I think it's a smart way, that the whole wafer cookie, where they're extracting Simple Rick's memories to put it in this wafer so we can consume it, or Factory Rick after he gets shot, that satisfaction of being free. Like, it is taking what is familiar and putting it in a different way that we can still consume it easily.
All right, well, I think that's it. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I want to thank Brandon from the Interdimensional RSS for joining us today.
Hey, thank you gents so much for having me. I appreciate you taking the time and listening to me rabble on about stuff. But yeah.
Thank you, not Justin Roiland.
I'm not trying, man.
You know what? Actually, we're gonna say that we got Justin Roiland on the podcast, and it's just gonna be you. You're just gonna pretend to be Justin.
I also just wanna, like, I actually listen to Interdimensional RSS, to all of our fans listening. And it's really good, and good in the ways, like, they do a lot of stuff about, like, news in the Rick and Morty world. They have interviews with cool people that we haven't had a chance to do yet. I would definitely go check out their interview with Ryan Ridley, one of the head writers on Rick and Morty. It's an amazing episode, and hopefully you like that and check out all the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're on iTunes, same as these fine folks. You hit us up on Twitter. We're at Rick and Morty Pod, rickandmortypodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, we actually have, today we're actually recording with Brian Newton, who directed this episode. So,
oh, nice.
So if you guys have any questions that you want to pass off to him for today, like why all the vials in the background look like dicks, you know, just let me know, and I will talk to Brian.
Yeah, I want to know that.
But again, hey, thanks guys so much for having me on. I appreciate
you. Hey, thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I want to remind you guys that if you have a couple seconds to write us a review, it really, really helps on iTunes. So if you do that, we really, really appreciate it. And make sure to keep sending your questions to the squanch at wisecrack.co?
Just squanch.
Oh, it's just squanch at wisecrack.co. And
yeah, if you give us a 5-star review, your email gets bumped up to the line, baby.
Oh, baby. Also want to remind you guys that we're starting a South Park podcast on Thursday. We are 1 week behind because I got sick, but we will be starting on Thursday, so be sure to check that out. That's on the Wisecrack Network on iTunes, so you can go ahead and subscribe early.
It's called Respect Our Authorita.
It's called Respect Our Authorita. And other than that, that's it. Thanks everyone for listening, and wubba lubba dub dub.
Wubba lubba still do not eat poop.
See you later.
Poop.
Peace.
Poop.
Peace out.
Bye-bye, guys.